looking verses 15 through 17. The exhortation there is love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. Then he proceeds to give us some reasons not to love the world. We want to look today at what these words do not mean, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world, and then what they do mean. But when John said, love not the world, neither things that are in the world, first of all, he was not referring to the physical aspects of the earth or universe. The universe, of course, is part of God's general revelation. Psalm 19:1 says, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. And God has manifested his goodness toward us by giving us things. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, 1 Timothy chapter 6, notice what it says, verse 17. 1 Timothy chapter 6, charge them that are rich in this world. And may I say, just because one would be considered rich in this world or in the world's goods, that does not make them worldly. Just like being poor does not make you unworldly. That's not what worldliness is, being rich or being poor. It's more an attitude. But charge them that are rich, because we have a tendency to look at those who have more than us, because, and again, in our minds, those only people rich are those who have more. We're not, but those who have more are. The tendency of God's people is to think upon these individuals as worldly. But the truth is, though they may have more things of the world, they may be less worldly than you who have less things. So it's not the things that make us worldly. That they be not high-minded. Now, if you become high-minded, you're worldly, proud. Lust of the flesh, the pride of life, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God. And he's talking to those that are rich in the world. He's telling Timothy to speak to those who are rich in the world, that instead of trusting in riches, that they trust in the living God, who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. Who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. So, God gives us things, and we're to enjoy it. Whether it could be creation itself. God put us in this world, put us in the midst of his creation, and we're to enjoy God's creation. We're to use it for his honor and for his glory. We're to enjoy it. And to enjoy God's creation doesn't make us worldly. Depends where you put that enjoyment. But we are to express our thanks, according to 1 Timothy 6, verse 17. We're to express our thanks continually for the daily substance that God provides. What if there's an individual who is very, very wealthy as far as the world is concerned, is a child of God? I've heard people preach that a faithful child of God cannot be wealthy. To me, that is one of the most absurd statements I've ever heard in my life. What happens if someone is rich. They tithe, they give in abundance over their tithe, and God does what he says he will do in Malachi chapter 3, open the windows of heaven and just pour down upon them. They can't get rid of it. No matter how much they give away, the Lord just keeps pouring it down upon them. Does that make them worldly? I don't think so. But people tend to think that way. Well, they drive a certain car, that makes them worldly. No, it doesn't. The car you drive doesn't mean whether you're worldly or unworldly. If you follow that logic, someone who drives a nice car, they're worldly. Someone who drives a junk heap, they're unworldly. Well, the person who walks is even more unworldly. And it's ridiculous. But this is what Pharisees do. They make lists. They make lists of what is acceptable. But on their list never includes them. It's always someone else. We have to be careful how we define worldliness. We're not prohibited. When it says, love not the world, that doesn't prohibit us from admiring the beauties of God's creation. He put it there for us to admire. Doesn't prohibit us from enjoying God's creation. He goes on, he says, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. The things that God has given us. Again, we've already talked about that, but we're to enjoy what God gives us. Not only are we to enjoy it, we are to use it for God's glory. And that's where worldliness comes in. If we don't use it for God's glory and we have no concern for God's glory, then you're worldly. If you have more concern about yourself and more concern how much more can I obtain, that's worldliness. Worldliness is found, again, in an attitude. It's found in a spirit. It's not necessarily found in the things that you own. Now, if you own a nice car because you refuse to give unto God, I believe you're worldly. But if you own a nice car and you give unto God and you're faithful unto God and you put God first, that doesn't mean you're worldly or a nice house or whatever. But John was not espousing also the idea that we do not love the people of the world. Though they are contrary to God, that is, the people that live in this world, they do things that are contrary to all the laws of God. You and I are to love them. We are to love them enough to preach the gospel to them. We're to love them enough to tell them of their lost condition and how the Lord can save their lives. Love not the world, neither things that are in the world. I don't believe he's saying that we are required to renounce all duties of life, to become careless in the discharge of our duties and our responsibilities. Proverbs 27, notice if we turn there. Proverbs 27, verse 23. Be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks, and look well to thy herds. So to be concerned about the money you have in the bank and to keep track of it, it doesn't make you worldly. We're to be diligent to know the state of our flocks. Put it in modern language that you and I can relate to is be diligent to know the state of thy finances or the state of what you own. That's a responsibility. Therefore, you need to do that so you don't spend more than you have, so that you do not spend more than you make. That doesn't make one worldly. Someone will say, well, he saves X amount of money, therefore he's worldly. No, he isn't. The Bible tells us to be diligent to know the state of thy flocks and look well to thy herd. But verse 24 says, for riches are not forever. Remember that also. That is, put everything in its proper place. That's where worldliness comes in, is when we put things in the wrong place. We get things ahead of God, and we're more concerned about things than we are spirituality. That's worldliness. Anytime we're more concerned about things, anytime we're more concerned about this world than we are our spiritual condition, we're worldly. I don't care if you drive a junk heap. I don't care if you don't have a car and you have to walk. If you put more emphasis upon things than spiritual things, you're worldly. You're worldly. No matter what you own or what you don't own, doesn't matter. So, again, it's a spirit. It's an attitude. So what do these words mean? Love not the world. Again, I don't believe John's talking about the physical world, but I believe he's talking about an order. I believe he's talking about an arrangement of things. He's talking about the world has a system. And the world has a system. The world has an order, the way the world is arranged. We are not to love the world. And again, love to the world is not limited to so-called worldly things. I mean, if you think about it, everything other than that which is spiritual is a worldly thing. The pew you're sitting on is a worldly thing. That piano is a worldly thing. So everything other than spiritual is a worldly thing. So just because an individual has a worldly thing doesn't make them worldly. So we're talking about a system. That which is loved becomes chief in our life. It becomes the principal thing of life. And when the world is loved, the world begins to possess us. It's not, worldliness is not so much what we possess. It's what possesses us. And if the world possesses us, regardless of what you have or don't have, if the world possesses you, you're worldly. You're worldly. So it's not so much in possessions that we have, but it's in what possesses us. When you love the world, it means the world governs you. The world's way of thinking begins to govern you. There's a lot of poor people who are very worldly because the world's way of thinking governs them. The whole welfare system governs them. Now, you would look at them and perhaps think, well, they're not worldly, they don't have anything. But they're governed by the world. Therefore, they're worldly. Therefore, they're worldly. So it's being possessed. It's being governed by the world. When the world is loved, it begins to absorb our interests. Doesn't mean that we can't. Do you honestly believe that the Lord puts us in this world, gives us all things to richly enjoy, but God doesn't want us to enjoy things? Of course he does. That's why he gives them to us. But to use them for his honor and glory. But when we love the world begins to absorb our interest. We become more interested in the world than spiritual things. When an individual misses the house of God, because they would rather do worldly activities. I'm sorry, but you're worldly. That's worldliness. You say, well, I don't possess a lot, and this that is an example of worldliness. When it absorbs our attention, when things begin to absorb our attention, so much so that I put spiritual things on the back burner, or I make spiritual things secondary, that's worldliness. And it can be anything. It can be a job. It can be school. But if I put it ahead of the Lord, then I've become worldly in that area of my life. If it absorbs a person's time, so much so that we don't have time for the things of God, I believe that's worldliness. But we have to be careful, because the things of the world, the responsibilities of the world, if we don't keep them in their proper place, or if we become worldly, those things begin to choke the word. And when the word is choked, we begin to suffer spiritually. And when things of the world start causing us to suffer in our spiritual condition or to be slack, we're worldly. Now notice in the book of Mark, chapter 4, verses 18 and verse 19, and the cares of this world. And we'll stop right there. The cares of this world does not make one worldly. The cares of this world, I mean, you can put a lot of things under that heading. The cares of this world is if you have a son or a daughter or a grandson or granddaughter or a loved one going into surgery and you are concerned about them, that is a care of this world. If you are concerned about anybody, that is a care of this world. If you have a burden, that is a care of this world. There's nothing wrong with the cares of this world. But they are dangerous at the same time. The cares of this world, and then he adds the deceitfulness of riches. Now that's worldliness. That's a love for riches. The deceitfulness of riches and the lust of other things. Now we're getting into worldliness. Begin to desire other things. When these things enter in, when these things take possession of us, and again it can be a legitimate care, a legitimate concern, but if it possesses us and begins to control our life, we're in trouble. When they enter in, they choke the word, and it becometh unfruitful. You can get so consumed with a loved one's illness or a loved one's surgery or whatever, so concerned with that, that you sit in the house of God and you can't think of anything but that. That is not good. Because now the word of God is being choked. So we have to be aware, though not everything in the world is sinful in itself, it's all dangerous. And it's all dangerous because of who we are. It's dangerous because of our tendency to let things absorb us and to let things govern us. So the prohibition, love not the world, to me means do not attach yourselves to the world. But it even goes further than that. Do not let the world attach itself to you. That is, you do not let it take control of your life. The one who is to have control of our life, the one who is to absorb our life, of course, is the Lord. So love not the world means you do not attach yourselves to the world. You do not allow yourselves to be governed. You do not allow yourselves to be controlled by its policies, by its methods, or by its trends. And when something happens, it can be a circumstance. But if a circumstance begins to possess you, that can qualify as worldliness. You're now under the control of an outside force. So love not the world. This shows itself in many ways. It shows itself by, or love for the world, shows itself by a conformity to the world's ways. A conformity to the world's ways. Notice Romans chapter 12, very familiar verse of scripture, of course. Romans chapter 12, verse 2. Verse 2 says, be not conformed. That is, the word conform means to form yourself, to fashion yourself in accordance with. Be not conformed to this world. In other words, we are not to be formed by the world's ways. I've got to have such and such. Why do you have to have it? Because everybody else has it. I've got to have it. That's worldliness. That is worldliness. That is being conformed to the world's ways. When you begin to think like the world, and you begin to reason like the world, and you begin to agree with the world's ways, that's worldliness. We're not to be conformed to the world. We're to resist. We're to live above the world's philosophies. We're to live above the world's reasonings. We're to live above the world's ways. We're to live above the world's pursuits. That is, we do not pursue the same things that the world does. And the world pursues these with reckless abandon, with no thought whatsoever concerning their soul. That's worldliness. That's worldliness. When you have to have something, but you never stop to think, how is this going to affect me spiritually? Again, there's nothing wrong with having some toys, but you had better stop and think, when am I going to use these toys? Now, if I work Monday through Saturday, when am I going to use these toys? The Lord's Day. Now, you better think about that, because now you become worldly. You buy a toy, and the only time you can use it is on the Lord's Day, and you use that instead of being in the Lord's house. You've put things ahead of spiritual. You're worldly. That's worldliness. So we need to always consider, if I say I have to have something, you'd better stop and think, well, when am I going to use it? When am I going to use it? And how am I going to use it? That's why I don't get too excited sometimes when people say, well, I bought such and such. Because immediately my mind begins to think, well, the only way I figure you can use it is on the Lord's Day. So this isn't something I'm going to be too happy about. And it's not something that you ought to be too happy about. You've made a bad purchase. If the only time you can use it is on the Lord's Day, the only time you can use it is it's going to interfere with that which is spiritual, you've made a bad purchase. I don't care how good a deal you got a rotten one. You made a bad purchase. That's worldliness. So we must not confuse. We must not be guilty of just making a list. Person has this, they're worldly. If they drive such and such a car, they're worldly. If they have such and such a house, they're worldly. That's foolishness. That is pharisaical. So don't fall into that trap. But again, at the same time, always remember, the spiritual must come first. And if the spiritual is not first, Then I'm worldly. If I sit at home and pout every Lord's Day because I don't have anything, I'm worldly. It's interfering with the things of God. So I believe this is something we need to seriously consider. Let's look to the Lord.